I got Merry Christmas. Bye. Merry Christmas. Okay. She's busy, probably. Fuck her. Ooh.
Was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. In my mind, I want you to be free.
Just turn it up.
Merry Christmas to me. to all our family and friends. I want you to remember this last.
Merry Christmas from the Temptations.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Warner Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right. Okay. All right. Some of you might have caught me during a hot mic moment. I apologize if you did. So it just happens. Welcome to the George Waddle Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. This is Thursday, the 22nd of December. I want to say a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to all of those out there. Listening at the beyond of my voice. You're welcome to the George Waddle Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. We are now on the air. I'm in my comfortable studio. And it's another nice day out there, folks. Another nice evening. A few nights ago, we were freezing our asses off here. And not just in Chicago, but most of the country. And they're talking about snow and rain and all this kind of thing. But they're not talking about the polar vortex. The polar vortex. I mean, it sounds like something really, really sinister, doesn't it? It sounds like it's going to get you. But at least we're not in that Arctic cold and that Arctic blast that we were in a few days ago. Not to say it will not be back again, but... at least we know what to expect. I mean, winter is winter. I mean, we've had a nice summer here in the city of Chicago. And I hope you've had one, too, wherever you might find yourself listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. I'm all over the place. I'm more into writing and I'm more into trying to be a better radio host than I am posting on Facebook. You might not see me post much unless if I do post, it'll be something advertising my or trying to show off my books or my writings or this radio show. OK, so that those will be my main two focuses. The main two things I'm going to focus on for 2017. I'm thinking about quitting writing altogether, but because I have so much stuff out there, I don't really know what else to write about. But we'll see about that in 2017, if I'm going to continue or to discontinue. Your feedback is always welcome on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I love writing. I love all of that kind of stuff. And, it's a great one of the things I think writing does for me. It's a great stress buster. If you're very stressful, writing can do it. Exercise, eating right, of course, taking your medication. But writing, it does something for me. I mean, when I'm sitting down here at the computer on Microsoft Word, trying to figure out what I'm going to say next in this story, it's therapeutic, I think. I think writing is therapeutic. I do fiction, sometimes nonfiction. But I tell people when they come on the show and I tell other authors that writing for me has to be fun. If it's not fun, then I can't do it. It has to be fun. It has to make me laugh. Whether it's a serious or whether I'm writing about something serious or something humorous or sarcastically or whatever, it has to be an enjoyment for me. I cannot write if it's not an enjoyment. I cannot write if I don't feel it. I know it's a zillion writers out there, a billion writers out there. I know that. But each writer is different. No writer is the same. I've had a ton of writers on the show, a ton of authors, and they're all different. They all come to their craft from different directions. And I come to my craft also from a different direction than they do. In the end, we're all satisfied with the output because it's fun. It's an enjoyment. And it's something that people should continue to do. And I don't understand why people who are writers and authors don't want to show their stuff. I've asked people to be on this show because they've written a book that I was interested in, that I found interesting, and they turned me down. I mean, this was years ago, months ago, and they turned me down. And I'm saying, wow, you have a book. You've written a book, and you don't want anybody to know that you have written a book. You don't want to talk about it. You don't want to promote it. You don't want publicity. Then why in the hell did you write a book? I mean, there you get some writers out here who are great writers, but you'll never see their stuff because they'll write this and they'll write that, and then they'll take it and put it in the bottom of the drawer somewhere, and they'll never look at it again, and no one else will know what they've done. And I've said this before, if you're going to be a writer, if you're going to produce material, let other people see it. Let other people know about it. I mean, that way you can get you some feedback on it, hopefully positive feedback, you know, in any instance. Show your work, you know, come on my show and talk about your work, you know, so and get the word out about what you do. You can make money at writing. You can make a living writing, but it's tough. It's hard because there's so much stuff out there for people to devour beside what you've written. You have to show your stuff. You have to put it out there. You have to let people know that it's there. Because if you don't let people know what you do, if you don't let people know what you do, they will never care about what you do. And that's the thing. People do not care if you're a writer. People do not give a damn about you being an author. And because they got their lives, they got things that they have to accomplish. They don't give a damn about you being a writer. So it's up to you, the author, the writer, to make people care about what you do. And the only way you can make them care about what you do, you have to present them with what you do. You got to publicize it. You got to talk about it. You got to be proud of it. Be proud of what you do, especially if you know that it's good and other people have told you that it's good. Be proud of what you do. There is a market out there for you to make a living at writing, but it's tough. It's hard. You're going to have to pursue it. It may take months, years, maybe even a decade, but you got to keep at it. You just might be one of the lucky ones and be an overnight sensation. Who knows? But if you're good at what you do and you know it, then others are going to also say that you're good at what you do. But first, you have to realize that you're good at what you do. You have to tell yourself that you're good at what you do. Of course, there's going to be a lot of people out here who are going to try to put you down, discourage you. Oh, you can't write that. Ain't no money in that. That, you know, so you got to throw those kind of voices out of your head and pursue what you love to do. You know, you want to write, write. You know, but make sure when you're writing, you learn every aspect of writing. Some people have to go to school to learn how to write. I mean, you got some people with master's degrees, PhD degrees, bachelor's degrees, and all kinds of degrees, and they can't write a lick. It doesn't mean that they're dumb. It doesn't mean that they cannot learn to write. It's just that they may not be the kind of writer that you are, and all you have is a high school education, or maybe less. But anyway, there's plenty of writing schools out here, plenty of writing colleges out here. If you don't know the difference between a pronoun and a verb, or a verb and an adverb or an adjective, then you need to go back to school and learn those things, because those parts of the speech, those parts of the speeches are vital to writing. If you don't know the difference between a comma and a semicolon and and a quotation mark, you have to learn those things in order to be a credible writer. Okay, like I said before, author Pembroke, did I mention this? I don't think so. Anyway, author Pembroke Sinclair. Yeah, that's what I said. Pembroke Claire. She may pronounce it a little differently, but I'm just trying to break her name up into syllables. P-E-M-B-R-O-K-E, Pembroke Sinclair. This is a woman. And she's going to be on the show real shortly. I think we communicated a few minutes ago. And she contacted me saying, you know, if her being on the show was still on, and I said, yes, it's still on. So author Pembroke Sinclair, I had a great time with the guest yesterday on the show. I mean, he was just very, very animated talking about being the best you can be and do not let adversity tear you down. You know, if you fall down, get up again. If you're having, because if you make a mistake, you know, mistakes are always, from my view, if you make a mistake, do not give up. Do not just throw in the towel. A mistake is always a learning point. I mean, think of all the millionaires and the billionaires and the successful people out here. Think of all the mistakes they made before they actually got to where they are. They had to make those mistakes in order to learn from those mistakes and not to do that again. But they kept getting up. Every time they got knocked down, they kept on getting up. You can get knocked down by people telling you that you can't make it, you can't do it. People who refuse to support you. You have to keep doing it. This show is all about motivating you. And I try to have people on the show that's going to help you better yourself, even myself. I mean, when a lot of the authors come on my show, a lot of the authors, even other guests that may come on my show who are not authors, who have something vital to add to the show, I find myself learning from them also. I don't know everything. I mean, I may have a podcast radio show. I may be a radio host, but I don't know everything. I'm just like you. I'm trying to learn as much as I can to help me to go forward and to be a better radio host. So we're all in the same boat here, folks, you know, and I'm pretty sure, because you know what? You're never too old to learn. You're never too old to learn. I mean, you can be 110 and there's always something new to learn. And do not ever feel shamed because you don't know something that you thought you should have known when you were younger or when you were in school. Don't ever feel ashamed of that, those things, because we are all out here to learn. If you ever stop learning, if you should stop learning, then you're dead. I learn something almost every day. I learn things that I should have learned 30, 40 years ago. And I'm saying, wow, I'm just not learning this. You know, I'm just not knowing. And, you know, I said, okay, all right, no problem. And that's what should happen. Do not stop learning. Always learn, no matter what age you are. 60, 50, 70, 80, you still will be able to learn things. And you still be, and not only will you learn, you will be able to teach others who may not know what you know. You see? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I better slow down because I'm talking over my tongue. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest is author Pembroke Sinclair. And there will be much, much more on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back. Thank you for tuning in. All right. Okay, Donald Trump is the president of the United States. He hasn't been sworn in yet, but we can probably say that. And most of us are still going to say president-elect Donald Trump. But there's no doubt about it. This guy's appointing people to his cabinet and, you know, getting his transitional team ready. Seems like he's just about to ready to go to move into the White House as the Obamas are about to move out. Donald Trump is still tweeting on Twitter. I mean, this guy, this is unprecedented for a presidential candidate or a president to be using Twitter to for international communication. That's crazy. I mean, this guy is going to leak national security and classified documents on Twitter. This guy is something else. And we are fucked. What can I say, folks? With Donald Trump, I think we're fucked. I think the world is going to blow up. Donald Trump doesn't know what he's doing. He's got all these world leaders. He's going to get them all pissed off. They're going to be bombing us. We're going to bomb them. The world will become obliterated under Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is going to blame the Democrats. That's what Republicans do. They fuck up and they blame Democrats for it. And Democrats bend over backwards and get kicked, you know. So we got Donald Trump. So we may not be around much longer, you know. But he is the president. He got this. He won fair and square with this electoral college vote, which is lawful because it's in the U.S. Constitution. But a lot of people don't understand the Electoral College. I don't even understand it, even though I know a little bit about it. I've always said just because something is law or something is in a vital document like the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, doesn't make it right, doesn't make it as if we all should agree with it, you know. And that's it. I mean, I don't agree with the Electoral College. I think the popular vote should be the one that selects a president. Because if you think about it, Hillary Clinton won almost 3 million votes in the popular vote. Trump was swamped. She landslided Trump. Hillary Clinton won this thing with the popular vote. But Donald Trump won more states with the Electoral College. And Hillary Clinton won all those states with less votes to the Electoral College. He won it hands down. And, you know, in some cases, many instances, you can say it was fair and square according to the Constitution of the United States. So a lot of you people out there still bitching about Trump. Stop bitching and try to get on with your life. You know, but you do know one thing, and pray to God that Trump don't have us blown off the universe. You know, pray to God that he doesn't, because Donald Trump likes to do things his way. He'll listen, but in the end, he's going to do it the way he wants it done, regardless of what anybody says. He doesn't give a damn. If God came down and said, Donald Trump, you do it like this. Donald Trump would look at God and say, F you, God. I'm going to do it the way I want it done. You know, I mean, this guy is tweeting out national policy on Twitter. Something that should be kept between him and the people around him and the local heads of states and other countries. This guy is all over Twitter with as he's always been during the campaign, and now as president, he's using Twitter instead of in-your-face diplomacy to try and settle some of these discrepancies. Donald Trump has already pissed off world leaders. That's no doubt about it. And he's pissed off some of American politicians and leaders because they're all over the television saying, why is he doing this? Why is he doing that? Why did he do that? That's unprecedented. And it is. But Donald Trump is Donald Trump. That's why I said at the beginning of the show, he's going to blow up the fucking world. So get ready, you know. grab your soda pop, because it's going to be interesting. Grab your popcorn, because this is going to be an interesting four-year ride with Donald Trump if he doesn't get his butt impeached. And some people are talking about that, too, him getting impeached because he is totally unfit for office and he's doing things on that a president candidate or a president-elect should not be doing. Okay, his sons are boneheads. We all know that. His wife, you know, she's pissed off because they're saying things about her that's probably true. So Donald Trump is president. Whether you like him, whether you agree with him, whether you hate him, or you, he's the president. So we're gonna have to respect him and respect that office until he's until he blows up the world and we're all dead. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And I want to say, in here in Chicago, and I hope it's safe where you are, I hope you're keeping warm if it's cold as hell. And if it's warm, I hope you're staying cool. Okay, there is a report here that's saying, it's saying that Chicago has been without deadly shootings for 4 days. 4 days has gone. And there has been no deadly shooting. There has been no, nobody died. Now, this is saying 4 days and nobody died. However, this is not saying 4 days, for 4 days there has been not any shootings, period. It just said nobody died. In other words, they were shooting all over the place, but at least nobody died. I mean, what kind of consolation is that? What kind of consolation? They're shooting. There probably been a, there may have been about 60 or 70 shootings in the city of Chicago, but nobody died is what they're saying. For 4 days, all the shootings, there's but nobody died. How can that be any consolation? You know, what do you want to do? You want to stop the crime. You want to curtail the crime. You want to try and prevent it. You don't throw out accolades like, you know, well, we had 100 shootings, but nobody died. You should like that, Chicago. That's progress. That is no progress. You've got to get the guns out of the hands of the bad guys. And then you come back and you say, we have been successful. But you don't come here and say four people did not get shot, so that's a successful weekend. That's bull crap. All right, you've been listening to you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Sometimes I get so passionate, folks, it's just unreal. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me all over the place. We got 629. Is it 629 or is it 630? Some places say, around here says 629. Some say 630. We're just going to go with, okay, we'll probably go with 630. 629, 630? Does it matter? A minute here, a minute there. Does it really matter? All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. All right. It's going to be fun, folks. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And I hope all you guys out there, guys and girls, are having a great time wherever you are. And this show is all about making the world a better place, one show at a time. All right. Our greatest weaknesses lies in giving up. The most certain way to succeed in life is to try one more time. Always try one more time. That if you try one more time, that may be the time that you actually succeed. All right. It's all about making the world a better place. Let's go to the phone, folks. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead, out of Chicago.
Am I on now?
You are on right now. Pembroke Sinclair? Is that the way you pronounce?
Yes, Pembroke.
Pembroke, okay. Oh, Pembroke, okay. Yes. Is that your real name?
Yes. No,
okay.
It's my pen name.
Yeah, I think I've read that in your bio when you when I saw that on it was on in my email that it was your pen name. Okay.
Yes.
All right. And you're going to be talking about zombies. something to that effect, though, right?
Yeah, if you got, if we want to talk about zombies, I love talking about zombies. My favorite thing to talk about.
Well, go right ahead. You've got the show. But first, give us a little bio about yourself. Tell us a little bit about you, what you've been doing, and all that kind of stuff. And then we'll get into the zombie thing.
All right, perfect. All right. Hello, everybody. My name's Pembroke Sinclair. As we established, that is my pen name. If you were to go with my real name, it's Jessica Robinson, which is not nearly as fun as Pembroke Sinclair is. I have been a published author since about 2009. I had some short stories done before then, and then 2009 is when my novels started coming out. I write in various genres, including sci-fi, fantasy, horror. I write children's books, middle grade books, young adult, and adult. I think my favorite grade age range to write in, though, is young adult, and that's where most of my books fall. As George said, and let me say thank you very much for having me really quickly, my big passion is zombies, and that's basically what I focus on when I write. And I've written fiction stories about zombies, and I've also written a nonfiction book about zombies. But I'm also pretty passionate now about horror in general.
Pembroke, how do you write a nonfiction book about zombies?
So the nonfiction book I did about zombies is basically kind of film criticism. And so it looks at how zombies are a metaphor for our fears of science.
Okay. I get you now. I was thinking, I said, do zombies actually exist? I'm asking myself. She's writing a nonfiction book about zombies.
You know, okay. That could be debatable.
Yeah, it could be. Okay. I mean, I used to be an avid zombie fan. I just loved them. I even went out and bought video games and started shooting them down, you know. And I was just in awe of zombies. You know, I remember the movie Z with Brad Pitt, the zombie epidemic, and it was a great movie. I loved it. But I was just so hooked on zombies, and I'm not the only one. Why do you think people are out there having such a zombie craze?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with what actually goes on in the world and what happens with what we have socially. One of the big things when George Romero's movies came out, you know, like Night of the Living Dead and Day of the Dead, you know, he does a really awesome job of putting social commentary in his film. And one of the big ones with Dawn of the Dead, if you remember that, when they're in the mall, is this notion of consumerism. And so I also believe that there's kind of this notion now with zombies, and the reason that we are so fascinated with them is because of the threat that they pose to humans. And it's one of those things where the threat comes from within, and it is something that overtakes a bunch of people. Very few people are able to survive it, and we have to find ways to cope and survive. And I think a lot of this can be seen in the way terrorism has been happening and the way the world has been kind of crumbling around our ears, if you will, in that notion. And it's with zombies, they're very, very human, you know, and at one point they were human. And so it's hard for us to kind of separate the monsters from the humans. And the other thing that's really, really fascinating about zombie films that I think people find so intriguing is who really are the monsters. Because if you think about a lot of zombie films, the other survivors are just as cruel, if not worse, than the zombies in the film. I mean, everybody knows what a zombie's going to do. They want to eat you. But the humans are the ones who are incredibly manipulative, and they are conniving, and you don't know what their end game is, as opposed to with zombies, you know. And you know how to fight the zombies, as opposed to you don't necessarily know how to fight the humans.
Yeah, the zombie craze is really taken off. It is really taken off. I mean, in every genre, zombies are really taken off. And as you mentioned, you do sound as if you're trying to say almost that zombies are just as human as you or I.
Well, yes and no. Because obviously they're not running around. Well, no, I mean, that, cause, I mean, but they did used to be. They used to be humans. I mean, and that's the thing when zombies, they are not picky about who's going to be a zombie. And anybody can become a zombie, you know, as opposed to, you know, say vampires. They kind of pick the elite to become vampires. Not everybody is going to become a vampire, but anybody can become a zombie. And you just...
So there's a difference between zombies and vampires. They're not the same. There's no correlation there. Is that what you're saying?
Yes and no. Both creatures are undead creatures, but zombies have no... they're not conscious. I mean, I guess it depends, because there are some zombie films where zombies are conscious. So I guess it depends on how you look at it. Whereas vampires, you know exactly what they are and what they're doing to people, where zombies have completely lost their conscious ability. I mean, like, I don't think they couldn't attack if they didn't want to. But again, like I said, it depends on what movie you watch, because there are some movies where they do have conscious thought.
Do you think... A few years ago, I used to have this connotation that Dracula had something to do with the zombie craze. Any correlation with Dracula here?
Well, you know, maybe. Because like I said, they're both undead creatures. And Dracula, especially if like Bram Stoker's, he always had Renfield. Yeah. Who was kind of his little slave who would go around and do anything and everything that he wanted to, kind of mindlessly, you know, serving the master and doing the things. So, I mean, I could say that there's some correlation there, but then you got to take into kind of consideration that the vast majority of zombies that we know are the George Romero zombies that are the dead that have risen from the grave, and they are mindless. I mean, you can't reason with them and tell them, hey, go run these errands for me, because they're not going to do that. So, and that's how most people know zombies. And if you think about World War Z also, and even The Walking Dead, they're all kind of mindless corpses just shambling around looking for a meal. But like I said, there are other schools out there that believe that zombies can be more. And even George Romero believed that zombies evolved. If you go through his film series, by the time you get to Land of the Dead, they've evolved into conscious thought also. So they're really complicated creatures. Are you still there?
Grimbrook? Are you yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, it was on, maybe it was your phone or something. I don't know.
Oh, something went wonky. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, go. Yeah.
Okay.
You've got, how many books have you written on this zombie craze?
Non-fiction. I just have one nonfiction book, and then I have... 1, 2, 3
Wow. Okay.
3 fiction, and then I have a new one coming out at the beginning, early in 2017.
So these are zombies, and how do you present a zombie? Is this just these are just random stories that you just make up, and are these zombies out to do what normal zombies do? Eat? Suck your blood or
very
whatever.
Much so. Eat your brains. Yeah, they're very much so in the George Romero vein of creatures where they're slow. But in the new book that I'm working on, which is called Humanity's Hope, they are a little different. They're still the traditional zombies, but I also have a couple of other different zombies within the book that are not traditional zombies.
I have written two Dracula books, two Dracula stories, But Dracula in my stories, and this is totally made up, Dracula in both of my stories, I'm having one come out in 2017 like you are. Dracula in both of my stories, he works alone. He doesn't have zombies. He doesn't have vampires. It's just Dracula causing mayhem. And I think, I don't know if people are going to find that weird or strange that it's just Dracula working along without the zombies and without vampires or turning into a bat or anything. This is just strictly coming from my head to the paper. Okay. And I have been advertising the first story and I've been getting some good responses from it. And people have been downloading it on the Kindle. It's just a... And you know what? When I was writing it, like you probably, I had a lot of fun writing it. I had a lot of fun eating people's brains. I just had a lot of fun. I got tired of writing the detective story, the cop and robber kind of writing. I just wanted to have fun with writing. So I chose to write about Count Dracula on his own without, you know, the zombies or the vampires. So, that's it. I mean, I just had fun with it. How about you?
I think your book sounds like a lot of fun. And I think the notion of Dracula being on his own would probably be more true to how he actually is as a person. You know what I mean? Just because when you live forever, you're also a killer and you probably just think of humans as food and you probably don't want to interact with them all too much. So I think it works. I think it would be really, yeah. But yes, I agree. When I write zombies, it's a lot of fun. And it's also a lot of way for me to relieve stress. So
yeah,
if I'm
exactly.
really upset and mad, being able to mangle people and destroy things on the page makes me feel
especially
a lot
the
better.
Ones, you know, especially the ones, you know, I do that all the time. Somebody will piss me off in real life. I'll go to my computer. Okay, there it goes. You know.
Yep. And, now you're dead.
Of course. Okay, author Pembroke Sinclair on the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's been fun. It's been great. Tell us where we can get in touch with you in case we want to buy these books, where they can be found, and all that good stuff.
I can be found on Amazon under Pembroke Sinclair for my fiction and then under Jessica Robinson for my nonfiction. I have a blog under Pembroke Sinclair, and then that's also where I have my Twitter account and my Facebook account. So basically, if you Google Pembroke Sinclair, you should be able to find me.
All right. One more question. You say you do short stories and you do novels.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any preference? If you had a preference, which one would you choose to do?
Novels.
Okay,
for
why?
Sure, without a doubt. Because I have discovered throughout my writing career that I cannot say things concisely and shortly. And so short stories are very difficult for me trying to get the whole thing in just a very limited space. So I like novels so that I can stretch it out for as long or, you know, even as short as I need to, but not too short that I feel like I'm just, that I'm reined in from creativity. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. But for me, I think I prefer short stories because it's faster. It's not going to take me a year or two to finish it. It's faster, but I do know, short stories. And when I do a short story, I got to make sure that I put enough in it in those stories to make those stories interesting. So you don't turn off the reader with a short story.
Right.
I love short stories. I do novels too, but I love short stories. And one of the complaints that I get from readers and other authors when they're reading my stories is that they're too short or I left them hanging or something like that. But you know,
right.
And then I get feedback from other people say, hey, great story. I know you're going to do another one because that was too short. But, you know, I just love short stories, you know, I mean, because my brain is always coming up with something. You know, I come up with five or six different stories and I can't, you know, just take 2 or 3 years on a novel and write it. So I just put it down in a short story and they're just as potent. Mm-hmm. And it has to be short stories because I think short stories can stand alongside of a novel, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I do think that people can do short stories very well. I mean, I do enjoy mm-hmm. reading short stories. I just personally, mm-hmm. I can't write them. And I think it's yeah. a good compliment from your readers to say that it was too short, because that means that they were very invested and they were really enjoying yeah. it and they wanted yeah. more. So
they wanted more. Yeah. And if I get enough readers saying that they want more, then I will do another standalone short story. I will take up mm-hmm. from where that story left off to do another story. That compensates that story, you know. But I love short stories. Yep. I really do. I can do about 6 or 7 short stories a year, where I can do a novel that'll take me a year and a half. So mm-hmm. I can get, you know, that's just me, you know.
Because
every writer is different. No writer is the same. We come at from different directions.
Exactly. Yes. And you got to write what makes you happy, because if you don't, then yeah. what's the point of writing?
Yeah, you got to write what you know, too. So. Write what you know. Primbrook Sinclair, thanks for being on the show. You were great. You were wonderful. I want to ask you, would you like a link of the show? So maybe you can put it on your website and your fans can come by your website and listen to you on this show. I can send you a link.
That would be awesome. That would be fantastic.
All right. Thanks for doing the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Bye-bye. Merry Christmas. All right, that was Primbrook Sinclair on the George Waddle Jr. Show. And we were just talking shop about zombies. All righty, you're listening to the George Waddle Jr. Show. Let's see if we can come up with something here. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be right back.
Ryan Dowd. I'm the executive director of Vincent House in Aurora, Illinois. We're a comprehensive homeless resource center.
I want to talk to you about the Electoral College and why it matters. All right. I know this doesn't sound like the most sensational topic of the day, but stay with me because I promise you it's one of the most important. To explain why requires a very brief civics review. The President and Vice President of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people. Rather, they are chosen by 538 electors. This process is spelled out in the United States Constitution. Why didn't the founders just make it easy and let the presidential candidate with the most votes claim victory? Why did they create, and why do we continue to need, this Electoral College? The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority-rule democracy. They knew from careful study of history what most have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies do not work. They implode. Democracy has been colorfully described as two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner. In a pure democracy, bare majorities can easily tyrannize the rest of a country. The founders wanted to avoid this at all costs. This is why we have three branches of government: executive, legislative, and judicial. It's why each state has two senators, no matter what its population, but also different numbers of representatives based entirely on population. It's why it takes a supermajority in Congress and three-quarters of the states to change the Constitution. And it's why we have the Electoral College. Here's how the Electoral College works. The presidential election happens in two phases. The first phase is purely democratic. We hold 51 popular elections every presidential election year, one in each state and one in D.C. On election day in 2012, you may have thought you were voting for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, but you were really voting for a slate of presidential electors. In Rhode Island, for example, if you voted for Barack Obama, you voted for the state's four Democratic electors. If you voted for Mitt Romney, you were really voting for the state's four Republican electors. Part two of the election is held in December, and it is this December election among the state's 538 electors, not the November election, which officially determines the identity of the next president. At least 270 votes are needed to win. Why is this so important? Because the system encourages coalition building and national campaigning. In order to win, a candidate must have the support of many different types of voters from various parts of the country. Winning only the South or the Midwest is not good enough. You cannot win 270 electoral votes if only one part of the country is supporting you. But if winning were only about getting the most votes, a candidate might concentrate all of his efforts in the biggest cities or the biggest states. Why would that candidate care about what people in West Virginia or Iowa or Montana think? But you might ask, isn't the election really only about the so-called swing states? Actually, no. If nothing else, safe and swing states are constantly changing. California voted safely Republican as recently as 1988. Texas used to vote Democrat. Neither New Hampshire nor Virginia used to be swing states. Most people think that George W. Bush won the 2000 election because of Florida. Well, sort of, but he really won the election because he managed to flip one state which the Democrats thought was safe, West Virginia. Its four electoral votes turned out to be decisive. No political party can ignore any state for too long without suffering the consequences. Every state, and therefore every voter in every state, is important. The Electoral College also makes it harder to steal elections. Votes must be stolen in the right state in order to change the outcome of the Electoral College. With so many swing states, this is hard to predict and hard to do. But without the Electoral College, any vote stolen in any precinct in the country could affect the national outcome, even if that vote was easily stolen in the bluest California precinct or the reddest Texas one. The Electoral College is an ingenious method of selecting a president for a great, diverse republic such as our own. It protects against the tyranny of the majority, encourages coalition building, and discourages voter fraud. Our founders were proud of it. We can be too. I'm Tara Ross for Prager University.
Join Prager University.
All right, thank you.
Click here to subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Click here to sign up. All right, we don't want it.
All right, we don't want it. Okay, back to the George Wilder Jr. show. I am looking at something that says Donald Trump is going to blow up the world. Nuclear experts say that Trump's tweet, his tweet about expanding our nuclear base weapons is a very bad sign. This guy's going to blow the damn world up. I mean, and he's going to do it by Twitter. He's going to blow us all up, folks. He's going to, and then he's going to blame somebody else for it. This guy is unfit for office. He should not be in office. He's going to blow the fucking world up. We are going to get in a war with everybody. He's in bed, no doubt, with Putin. Russia's president. No, there's no doubt this guy interfered with the election. Donald Trump told him to interfere with the election. I mean, there's plenty of video out there that proves that. Donald Trump is just, the world is in a bad way. You know, I mean, how do you use Twitter for everything? National security. I mean, you don't put this stuff out there on Twitter. Donald Trump is a buffoon. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He's not going to listen to his advisors. He's not going to listen to the his generals, the brass. He's not going to listen to his chief of staff or the people of the United States. Donald Trump is going to be listening to Donald Trump, because that's all it's about. Donald Trump is about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is about making himself look good. To hell with everybody else. He's a braggart for himself. He's going to get us all blown off the fucking earth because he's unfit. He doesn't know what he's doing. He won't listen to no one. He just go batshit crazy on Twitter with America's secrets. And he's got the red phone right there. He's got the nuclear buttons right there. I mean, this guy is going to fuck us all up. That's all it is. And I'm saying, yeah, let him be president. He voted. I mean, we voted. People voted for him. I didn't vote for him. Okay. I feel good about that I didn't put this clown, this nitwit in office in charge of everything. He's right. Right now he's saying he's not going to accept daily briefings. He's trying to be a different kind of president that's going to get us blown the fuck off the map. And that's the serious thing. And I'm not kidding. I'm not joking. Donald Trump is bad for America. And I don't think that the Republicans in Congress and the Democrats in Congress should let him get away with this. They know how, if anybody needs their power curtailed, it's Donald Trump. Congress knows how to take the power from his hands. You know, I mean, they did it with Obama. They lessened Obama's power, if you can remember. I mean, they weakened him. They've got to weaken Trump also. Make sure he doesn't get us blown off the fucking earth. Make sure he doesn't say nothing stupid to some of these powerful leaders around the world, and they coming over here dropping bombs on everybody. There is no doubt about it. We are in fucking trouble with this guy, and he won't listen. I mean, he'll listen, but he will not. But it's up to him to take your advice or not to take it. And Donald Trump wants to be Donald Trump. He wants all the accolades. He wants all the attention on himself. You know, he's totally unfit for office. He's a potential rapist, sexual assaulter, liar, suits all up his ass, but still, you know, he's in office. You know, and it's a shame. 3 million votes. Hillary, the popular vote, Donald Trump lost by 3 million votes, or close to 3 million. And, you know, I just don't understand it. But it's in the Constitution, as you just heard. The electoral vote, the electoral college is fucked up, as far as I'm concerned, because that almost means that your vote and my vote didn't count in the presidential election. That's what that meant. You know, but I'm not saying do not vote for president of the United States. Continue to vote. But something's got to give with this electoral college. The popular vote, your vote, my vote, their vote has to count for something in a presidential election. Not 270 votes and this guy wins the presidential office. Whereas this other person over here, she gets close to 3 million votes over what Donald Trump has and Hillary loses. She landslided this guy, but she lost only because Donald Trump won more states with electoral votes than she did. And also the fact is that a lot of people did not vote. A lot of people did not vote. And another thing, a lot of people who once voted for Obama switched their vote and voted for Donald Trump. They were pissed off and fed up with Obama. They found themselves in the same position as they were when they voted for him in 2008. They were just pissed off at Obama. So they decided, fuck Obama, we're going to vote for Trump. And they did it. Or just screw Obama, we're not going to vote at all. And Trump came up with all of these 270 electoral votes. Totally fair. Because it's in the Constitution of the United States. You may think it's unfair. I may think it's unfair, but you cannot deny the Constitution. And I've said this before, just because something is in the Constitution doesn't make it right, doesn't make you or me like it, but it's the law. It's the law of the land if it's in the Constitution, and it is. But the thing is, Donald Trump is dangerous. He's a dangerous person. We have got to stop this guy. We got to stop him. We got to take away his powers. He's got to be impeached or something. We're going to be blown off the face of the earth with this guy. His temper is too short. He's got a short fuse. He gets mad. He gets pissed off. You know, he gets upset. And he's going to, you know, get us blown to smithereens. And I believe that. Unless the Democrats and the Republicans, bipartisan, take away and limit his powers so he don't get us into no fucking World War III and World War IV and World War V, because it's possible with this guy. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's go down here to Keith Overman. He has something to say about Obama. I mean, Trump. Maybe both of them.
I'm Keith Overman, and this is The Resistance. We have elected an idiot. For all the insanity and the stunning self-absorption and the bullying and the delusional view of America that would embarrass a high school dropout watching cartoons while strung out on meth. The much more existential threat from the Swiss cheese personality of Donald John Trump roared to the forefront over this weekend past. And that existential threat is simply this. In the complex international relations that, like it or not, keep the world from blowing itself up every afternoon, Trump has just proved he has no earthly clue what the fuck he is doing. Just since last
Friday,
Donald Trump has given aid and comfort to our Russian enemies who are aiming for nothing short of world prominence with the help of their jackass Trump. He has undermined this nation's status as the only enforcer left on the side of human rights. And he has screwed up, whether inadvertently or as reported Sunday night deliberately, nearly four decades of diplomacy balanced on a razor's edge with China and Taiwan. And just as that China and Taiwan diplomacy began to stabilize, he went and screwed it up again on Twitter. Good work, moron. You don't have to live next door to the United Nations to understand why talking to the president of Taiwan and making it public and referring to the close economic, political, and security ties between Taiwan and the United States just increased the chances that Trump will get some of us, including his supporters, killed. Since 1979, we have played a silly little childish game with mainland China. If we don't make a big deal about that island of Taiwan, if we don't call it a nation, if we recognize that psychologically Taiwan is to the Chinese what communist Cuba has been to us since 1959, if our diplomats and presidents and dipshits elect like Donald Trump don't rub China's nose in it, the Chinese will not wipe the more or less democracy of Taiwan off the freaking map. It's that simple. The 1,350,000,000 mainland Chinese communists will not turn the 23.5 million Chinese on Taiwan into a parking lot. All we have to do is not do exactly what Donald Nitwit Trump did by saying what he did to the Taiwanese president last Friday. But of course, he did it because he thinks he knows better than everybody else about the world when he doesn't know shit. But anyway, what's the fate of 23.5 million Chinese on Taiwan compared to what really matters? The president of Taiwan called me today to wish me congratulations on winning the presidency. Thank you. Interesting how the U.S. sells Taiwan billions of dollars of military equipment, but I should not accept a congratulatory call. Because clearly the point of an incoming presidential administration is to see how many leaders around the world call in to tell him how terrific he is. We now see, 6 weeks out from the inauguration, the outlines of the Trump doctrine. Congratulate Trump! Sunday, a crowded elevator's worth of trumpets pushed a story in the Washington Post that this was all planned. It was a more robust defense of Taiwan, which is, of course, even dumber, especially if the idiot-elect has to publicly disguise his planned robustness as naivete, because, of course, he then gets mad when people call him naive, and so thus he doubles down on the whole thing Sunday night on Twitter. So now not only are the Chinese pissed off, not only is their help in whatever looms next for us in North Korea in jeopardy, and not only is an actual slow growth in the reliability of the relationship between our two countries at risk, but who benefits from uncertainty between the U.S. and China? We don't win from it. The Chinese don't win from it. In whose interest is the new confusion, the new setback, the new ass-hattery from Trump? Russia. Always Russia. Russia. And by the way, guess what flooded out of a WikiLeaks dump Saturday that you probably didn't hear about? 90 gigabytes, 2,420 documents of intelligence related to Germany and the German President Angela Merkel, ahead of Germany's upcoming elections. Germany, which since Trump's election by a minority of our voters, has already taken our place as the leading democracy in the world and the only Western power able or willing to stand up against the passive-aggressive world war that Russia has been waging for several years, now with the aid and comfort of President-elect Donald bumbling amateur Putin puppet fucking Trump. And yes, I said Trump's election has already resulted in Germany taking our place as the leading democracy, the leading enforcer on the side of human rights in the world. And if these fiascos with China and Taiwan and WikiLeaks in Germany are not evidence enough, there was a third Trump diplomatic disaster that might actually have eclipsed the other two. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte, the street thug who has had thousands of his citizens murdered by police and vigilantes without trial, or in many cases without even arrest, on the pretext of an anti-drug campaign. Duterte says he too got on the phone with Trump on Friday, and that Trump endorsed the barbarism Duterte has unleashed. I could sense a good rapport, an animated President-elect Trump, and he was wishing me success in my campaign against the drug problem, Duterte said. He understood the way we are handling it. We are many things in this country, but we have never and must never stoop to murder disguised as law and order by a dictator who has compared his own actions to those of Adolf Hitler as if he were complimenting himself. Worst yet, Duterte said this buffoon Trump has invited him to visit New York and Washington, and bluntly, Rodrigo Duterte should not be admitted to this country even in a casket. But don't tell Trump that. He knows everything. If this is how this dense, pea-brained little man is going to run things, if this is how far in over his own fat orange head he's going to be internationally, if this is how he is going to strut as president, a triple-chinned bull in a nuclear China shop, he cannot be allowed to become president. Because after January 20th, if he decides to have a week of prioritizing receiving congratulations for his inaugural, and tweeting out his petulance about Chinese taxes, if he can't manage to keep his fucking ego out of these opaque but essential balancing acts, the ones which stitch together the world as it is, he could get us all killed before his next appointment with whoever or whatever colors his goddamned hair. Resist. Peace.
Well, I don't have to tell you that Keith Olbermann is really pissed off, and he's dead on the money. Trump is going to get us all fucking killed. That is no doubt about it if somebody don't rein him in quick. And the only people that can rein him in are the Republicans in Congress and the Democrats who are also in Congress. They can take away his powers, and they should be negotiating that right now. They should be discussing that. I mean, because with this latest fiasco, which is he alarms the control community with a nuclear tweet. Okay, he's tweeting about nuclear proliferation on Twitter, you know, to Russians, to the world. And this is totally wrong. I mean, there's people all over the damn television, internet, and everywhere saying that this is wrong. He's the guy is a nut. You know, I mean, this is the first start of him getting other countries pissed off at us, mad at us, upset us, and maybe even wanting to bomb us, you know, get us off. And here's a sign saying right here, here's something saying that Trump, keep away from the nukes. Wow. Okay, this is going, it says the armed control community. They're very, very pissed off at Trump for tweeting something about nuclear proliferation, letting our enemies know every goddamn thing because he tweets it. All right, it says, I'm reading an article on Huffington Post, folks. It says the arms control community is sounding an alarm on President-elect Donald Trump, calling for the United States to greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capability. Because if the United States expand its nuclear capability, other countries are going to be doing the same thing. Nuclear weapons can blow you away, a country, can destroy an entire country. Nuclear weapons. You don't need guns or tanks or bombs or fighter jets. Nuclear weapons will do it. One fucking nuclear bomb could obliterate America. And we've got an idiot in the White House that's getting ready to start this. And it's serious. Of course, he's going to deny it because basically Trump don't know what the fuck he's doing. You get this guy upset, we're gone, folks. This guy get pissed off because somebody called him an idiot or a orange-faced buffoon. He's going to push that red button and we're all dead. You know, I mean, like Hillary Clinton has stated, he has thin skin. If anybody says something wrong, look at him wrong, he doesn't like, he's going to bomb the hell out of them. They're going to come and bomb us. You know, I mean, so it's behooving that Congress, Democrats and Republicans, put a stop to this guy. He's dangerous. He's unfit. And the Republicans should know this. They should stop kissing his ass and limit his powers. They can do it. They can do it. It says here that Trump is ready to play golf with Tiger Woods on Friday. Isn't that something? Trump playing golf? Trump is too big, too fat, too old. It's not that he's going to be playing golf with Tiger Woods. It's going to be a photo op. That's all it's going to be. We know Trump can't hit a ball. If he's out of shape, you know, a lot of people have died on the golf course. I mean, just because they got out there, they were out of shape, unhealthy. They got out there on a golf course trying to, you know, hit a ball, and they just drop dead because you cannot really anything that you do sports-wise, if you're up in age 60, 65, 70, 75, 80, you have to be in great shape to do those things. If you're not in shape to do, to play golf, to play hockey with your kids or to play tennis, you're going to have some sort of, your heart can't take it because it's not strong enough for those kinds of activities. You have to actually be in tip-top shape to play those games. Golf. If you get out there and you're not in shape and you're all over the place with your belly and all this kind of thing, and you could really, you know, have a heart attack and drop dead right there. And he should know that. So this is why I'm thinking, and Trump does look out of shape. There's no doubt about it. He looks very, very out of shape. And that's why I'm saying, folks, that he's going to be playing golf with Tiger Woods on Friday. Obviously, it's going to be a photo op. That's all it is, a photo op. I don't know whether Tiger Woods is a Republican or a Democrat or independent. I have no idea. It doesn't matter anyway, you know. It doesn't matter anyway. So and it says down here, Trump talks with the Egyptian president. Trump is all over the place when it comes to world leaders. When it comes to world leaders, he's all over the place. And he's pissing them all off. Yeah, and it's not funny, but, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, and he's pissing them off big time. So, folks, it's up to Congress to curtail this guy's power. He's got a lot of power. He's got his executive authority. He can use that to change things. He doesn't even need Congress with that. And every executive power written into law by Obama, Donald Trump can come in the office and just erase all of that. It'll be all gone. All of Obama's work will be gone. They're going to vote to get rid of Planned Parenthood. They're going to vote to get rid of Obamacare and anything else that Obama has made into law, written into law. He can get rid of all of it on his first day. Obama, they keep on talking about Obama's legacy. Obama has no legacy. For 8 years, he's been in office. With the election of Donald Trump, he has no legacy. Obamacare is not a legacy. That's a joke. Most African Americans say the same thing. Obamacare is a fucking joke. Obama has no legacy unless he's going to look towards his presidential library, other things around the city named after him. That's about it. But as a legacy, no. And don't tell me anything about him saving the economy back in 2008, 2009, 2010. You know, that's because nobody went to jail for that. Somebody should have been rotten in jail for that. But Obama refused to send people to jail. He could have sent Dick Cheney and George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, and some more players to jail for that illegal war in Iraq, saying that they had weapons of mass destruction and they didn't have a damn thing. Lies. He didn't send nobody to jail. Obama just didn't like or doesn't like to send people to jail, especially when they deserve to go. He doesn't like it. He doesn't want it. I don't see his legacy. I don't see what he's done. I see that he's occupied the office for 8 years, and a lot of people still like him because they feel that he's smarter than George Bush. He's smarter than Donald Trump, but yet he hasn't done a goddamn thing for black people. He's done more for gay people. He's done more for Hispanics. He's done more for refugees coming into the country, giving them sanctuary, food stamps, free housing, driver's license, money in their pocket, and taking away money from people who were born in this country. And in Illinois, if I can say it. So I don't see a legacy nowhere for Obama. He's going to try to come up with something, because the election of Donald Trump just obliterated any kind of legacy for this man. You know, and a lot of black leaders, a lot of black youth, and a lot of black people, African-Americans, are totally, grossly disappointed in Obama. That's why a lot of them, thousands of them, millions of them, switch their vote from Hillary to Donald Trump because they did not want a third term Obama, and that's what Hillary would have been. That is no doubt about that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're just about off the air, folks. I want to say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. You guys stay safe out there. We got about 10 more minutes left into the show. I want to say you guys stay safe out there. Keep healthy. Make sure you tune into the show. We will be off the air on Christmas. We will be off the air on December 26th, but we will be back here on December 27th. And you have a safe Christmas. We're going to try and do the best we can to celebrate and have fun on Christmas. And once again, I want to thank my guest, author Pembroke. I love that name, Pembroke Sinclair. Wasn't she fun? Talking about zombies, right? We talk about everything on the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's all about making the world a better place. And if you are a zombie writer, then you write about zombies. I am not a zombie writer. I am not a vampire writer. I'm doing Dracula because I love it. I want to do a twist on it. And one of the reasons why I'm doing these two short Dracula stories is because they're fun. They're fun to write. I can write anything I want, say anything I want, be any character I want. And I just love that. And I think you will too. You will too. I already have a short story, a short zombie story out already called Dracula 2021. Pick that up and give it a review if you can. And we're going to have another Dracula story coming out in, either January or February of next year, 2017. It's fun, folks. It's just, it's scary. It's going to be very scary. I don't write anything that's not scary. And I guarantee you, these two stories will scare your ass off. I mean, because it's scaring me and I'm the writer, right? Okay. Okay. We got about how many more minutes? We got six minutes left into the show. I want to say this again. Merry Christmas, and you guys stay safe out there. Have a great celebration, and I hope all you kids out there, people out there, I hope you get a horde of presents, and just stay safe. I don't know what else to say. Just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, 2017. When I think about 2017, folks, I think about getting older, another year older, and I really don't want to be another year older, but it's coming, and I can't stop it. And we can't stop it. So we're going to do this. Like I said before, I will not be back on the air until after Christmas, after the day after Christmas, 27th. So a lot of people are taking off. You know, there's a lot of people out there on the road. I hope you be careful. I hope you be careful, if I can say it. Careful visiting friends and family around the world, around the United States. Just be careful out there. You know, it's going to be dark. Watch the bad guys. The bad guys are out there. You got to make sure you watch your surroundings. The bad guys are out there and they want what you got. So Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I'm just rambling on. I'm just rambling. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me right here. Go to Amazon. Download some of my stories. They're great. They're good. They're wonderful. And I want to say Merry Christmas one more time. I think I've said it about 5 or 6 times. Let me say it one more time. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope to see you the 27th of December, the day after. The day after the 26th. Okay. 2 days after Christmas. Because, you know, a lot of people, whether you're at work or at school, it's Christmas break. So, and it's going to be Christmas break a day or so for the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be back. And if you can't help it and you just got to listen to the show, you can always listen to the podcasts that were recorded earlier. It's a bunch of them out there. George Wilder Jr. Shows podcasts. Listen to those shows. They're great. They're wonderful. They're informative. Great guests. Okay. We're going to do this and we should be right back in a minute or so. Maybe 3 minutes. Thank you.
wonder child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
All right. Once again, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. You guys be safe out there. If you have to listen to my show, there's going to be podcasts of the show. There's plenty of them, 230 of them, I believe. Every one of them are good, great guests, great information, inform, educate, inspire, and empower. That's what the show is all about, making the world a better at a time. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. I hope to see you next week on the 27th. Bye-bye, December 27th. Bye-bye. Happy New Year, everyone.
Just